Greetings, and welcome to the Pressure Biosciences Incorporated Third Quarter 2017 Financial Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Richard Schumacher, President and CEO. Thank you. Please begin.
Thank you, Roya. And thanks, everyone, for joining us for our third quarter financial review and business update. Before we start, I need to read this cautionary statement. The following remarks may constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Forward-looking statements involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors which may cause the actual results, performance, or achievements of the company to be materially different from any future results, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. Such factors include, among others, those detailed from time to time in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. We expressly disclaim any obligation or undertaking to release publicly any updates or revisions to any forward-looking statements to reflect any change in our expectations or any change in events, conditions, or circumstances on which any such statement is based. So today I'm going to turn it over to Joe DiMaggio. Joe's going to give a brief overview of the third quarter financial results. We're going to then follow with a few remarks from me and then basically about a general business update. And then we'll be pleased, Joe and I, to take any questions. So, Joe?
Thank you, Rick. Total revenue for Q3 2017 was $646,000. An increase of $111,000 or 21% year over year. This increase was primarily from increases in both instrument and consumable sales. We believe total revenue will continue to increase on a year over year basis for the remainder of 2017. Products and services revenue increased to $604,000 in Q3 2017 compared to $501,000 for the prior year same period, an increase of 21%. Comparing Q3 2017 to Q3 2016, instrument sales increased to $411,000 from $384,000, an increase of 7%, while consumable sales increased to a record $85,000 from $33,000, an increase of 158%. We believe products and services revenue will continue to increase on a year-over-year basis for the remainder of 2017. Grant revenue increased to $42,000. In Q3 2017 from $34,000 in the prior period, an increase of 23%. We believe grant revenue will continue to increase in the final quarter of 2017. Operating loss increased to $1.1 million in Q3 2017 from $452,000 for the same period in 2016, an increase of $673,000. This increase was primarily to a significant one-time credit of approximately $400,000 received in Q3 2016 from a former professional service provider. The remaining increase in 2017 operating loss was mostly due to headcount increases in sales and marketing and significant charges related to the registration statement process for a proposed $12.5 million financing and associated U.S. equities exchange uplist. The statement was withdrawn by the company in August 2017. Net loss per common share, basic and diluted, was a negative 2.07 for the quarter, compared to a net loss per share, basic and diluted, of 96 cents for the same period in 2016. This increase in net loss per share was due to the significant increase in Q3 2017 operating loss, again, primarily related to those one-time charges related to the registration statement and the credit of approximately $400,000 in the prior year. Total revenue for the 2017 9 months ended was $1.7 million, compared to $1.5 million for the prior year same period, an increase of $181,000 or 12%. This increase was primarily due to a higher revenue from instrument and consumable sales. Product and services revenue increased to $1.6 million, for the first 9 months of 2017, compared to $1.4 million for the same period in 2016, an increase of 13%. Comparing the first 9 months of 2017 to the same period in 2016, instrument sales increased to $1.1 million from $1 million, an increase of 12%, while consumable sales increased to 200,000 from 150,000, an increase of 34%. Grant revenue remained steady at 128,000 in the first 9 months, compared to 127,000 in the prior year period. Operating loss was $3.3 million for the first 9 months of 2017, compared to a loss of $2.5 million for the same period in 2016, an increase of $770,000. This increase was primarily due to the hiring of our four field sales directors in 2017, costs stemming from the August 2017 withdrawal of a registration statement, the hire of a full-time CFO, and other expenses related to the growth of the business. Net loss per common share, basic and diluted, was 7.28 for the 9 months ended September 2017, compared to a net loss per common share, basic and diluted, of 6.81 for the same period in 2016. And with that, I'll pass it back to Rick.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate that. And we will certainly, as we've said in the press release today, we thought we had a good, strong quarter, especially with revenue growth. And importantly, we believe that that revenue growth will continue and even accelerate as we move into the fourth quarter and into next year, when you look at it as a year-over-year basis. We're very excited about having our sales team together. We're very excited about the new products that are available that we have out there. And excited for the future. So if you look at some of the operational highlights over the third quarter, number one is back on September 18th, we announced that our new next-generation instrument, the Barocycler 2320 Extreme, had been named a finalist, not nominated, but had been named a finalist in the very prestigious R&D 100 Awards for 2017. In fact, our head of R&D, Dr. Alexander Lazareff, will be attending the award ceremony this Friday in Orlando, Florida. It's one of these things where you have to say we don't expect to win. It would be terrific if we did, but we think we've already won. We think we've already won because we've been named a finalist. Being a finalist in what is generally called the most important innovation recognition award worldwide, it's been called the Oscars of innovation. They talk about it as being an award that identifies the top 100 revolutionary technologies of the past year. All of these things make us feel like we're already a winner. We're a small company. When we looked at the 150 or so finalists in many different categories, we're looking at MIT and Stanford and General Electric and General Motors and the Oak Ridge Laboratory and so many prestigious and well-known organizations. And then we're in with all of those. So again, we consider ourselves already a winner because we've made it to the finalist. We've been invited to the ceremony this Friday down in Orlando. Dr. Lazarus will be there to represent us. We're so excited just getting to the point of being a finalist. We put a lot of effort into the development of this instrument. This instrument is going to take us to the next level. This is an instrument that has replaced the original instrument that we had for about 8 years. That original instrument went to pressure just like the new one, but it could only go to certain pressures, and once it got there, when you wanted to come back down, you had to come back down all the way down to ambient, to regular pressure, basically 14 half pounds per square inch. The new instrument can take us up to pressure multiple different ways and can take us down from pressure multiple different ways. Doesn't have to come all the way back down. We can go to 30 or 40,000 PSI and come back down 1,000 or 2,000 or 20,000 PSI. In addition, the older instrument had very limited input and had no output because it was microprocessor driven. The new instrument is computer driven, and so it has a tremendous amount of input. It has the output through USB port manufacturers. Biopharma manufacturers of drug products are going to be able to use it now, and they'll be able to download all that the instrument does in their processing and keep it for records for themselves, for FDA inspections, and for others. So it's just got so many capabilities. You know, we call it bells and whistles, but these are not just bells and whistles because it flashes with a brighter light or looks fancier. These are bells and whistles that are helping our customers get to what they need to get to easier, faster, more efficiently, and we think with higher quality. So we're so excited that this instrument has received a due that it is due. I will also add that one, I mentioned this in our last call, one of the largest biopharma companies in the world with facilities in multiple countries, a multi-billion dollar company, and was a small customer of ours a year and a half ago, has become a much larger customer of ours, and they've held our hand through the whole process of helping us bring our software, the software that runs this new instrument, up to be in compliance with good manufacturing and good laboratory practices. This is the key, because being GMP or GLP compliant means that this instrument can be used by all of these biopharma companies that are developing their pharmaceuticals and in many different areas of that development. Everywhere from validation to drug design and development to quality control to release, it never could be used before because of the lack of input and total lack of output. That's all changed. So we're very excited that that one drug company, which I cannot name but hopefully can in the near future, that one company has bought four instruments from us in the past 4 months, and we think has the capability of ordering many more. Those four are pretty much all for this one location, and they have multiple locations around the world. And they're a microcosm of what's available, we believe. So the first bit of good news in terms of the quarter was the announcement on being a finalist. And it's not just, they threw us in. This is an amazing instrument. And kudos to my team here that spent pretty much a lot of time in 2 years on top of everything else we had to do. We ended up designing and developing and manufacturing it all ourselves. It is now manufactured for use by an ISO certified lab that is down the street 15 minutes away. And they make instruments for General Electric and many other, GE Healthcare and many other companies. But we had to do all the early work from developing the specifications to making the prototype. And that was about a 2-year project. It was about $1 million if we'd gone outside. We did it ourselves, for a fraction of that cost because we kind of fit it in. So kudos to Dr. Edmund Ting and Dr. Alexander Lazareff and the entire team here, Dr. Nate Lawrence, everybody had a piece of that. And a second bit of news that we put out during the quarter was that that the company itself was issued 2 patents. We put this out on October 2nd, 2 new patents. We have 15 patents that already exist in the area of our main technology, pressure cycling technology. But we've been issued 2 new patents in China for what we call ultra shear technology, or UST. Ultra shear is, we think, a widely applicable high pressure based technology platform that will take us to places that we could only have dreamed of a few years ago. Ultra shear technology is based upon high pressure. This company is a pressure company. We are pressure experts. I believe we have some of the top experts in high pressure in the world right here at Pressure Biosciences. And we're trying to use this pressure in the area of developing products that will help the life science laboratories get to an answer faster, better, with higher quality. Ultra shear does that, but it actually goes further. Ultra shear technology has many applications. Basically, we are putting liquids under pressure, particularly liquids that don't mix, that we call immiscible. Just think about vinegar and oil. Don't mix. They settle out, and we put them under pressure. And then once they're under pressure, as we release them, we release them through certain valves that were invented by Dr. Ting and Dr. Lazareff when they were working on this project. They literally started working on this project a few years back, supported by our government, the National Institutes of Health, and a second phase SBIR grant. They were working on this to look at a way to shear DNA, break DNA, which is very tough to break. And Dr. Ting, who is a pioneer in high pressure processing in food, if you go to Starbucks and you look at the Evolution juice line, you'll see there's no chemicals added because Starbucks puts all those juices in the Evolution juice line through high pressure processing. They don't put it through ultra shear. They bring it up to high pressure, and the pressure kills the bacteria so that they can put a label on that juice and say you don't have any additives. There's no chemicals that have been added to it. However, that juice has a shelf life as long, if not longer, than if you added chemicals, but it is what you call clean food, clean label food. Dr. Ting was a pioneer with the U.S. Army in developing high pressure processing 20 years ago in the food industry, and not only Starbucks, but ConAgra and so many other companies have taken it to the point where using high pressure to kill bacteria in food is a $10 billion market. What ultra shear technology does, with Dr. Ting's background, it not only puts the materials under high pressure, but it releases them through valving that causes very high shearing or breakage, and therefore we can take oil droplets and cut them down, bring them down to nanoparticles. They're so small that those oil droplets can be absorbed. We believe they can be absorbed by the body. We believe they'll go in the solution in water. So we can take compounds that are not normally mixed, and we believe we can mix them. We can get them stable. We think that in many cases we don't even have to add chemicals like emulsifiers, that will help keep them together. So it has wide applicable, potential applications. It's got applications in food and dairy products that cannot be, used and processed through high pressure processing. Perhaps ultra shear technology can get them to the point where they can be clean label. In the area of cosmetics and nutraceuticals and pharmaceuticals and lubricants and inks, all of these things. Imagine your favorite raspberry vinaigrette, putting it through ultra shear technology and it gets bottled as one solution. Your favorite balsamic vinegar and oil. Your paint, going down to your local hardware and buying paint, never having to mix it again because it's gone through ultra shear and it's been mixed to the point where it's very stable and stays in solution. The potential for ultra shear is rather large, and we're very excited about the patents that were issued. We've filed in the U.S. and Canada. We've filed throughout all of Europe. We've filed in Japan, of course, in China, in Australia, and many other countries. So we're waiting. The word back from the patent offices has been good. We got early approval in China. We think we're very optimistic we'll get approval elsewhere. So ultra shear technology is a very, very exciting process for us that we think has a capability to take this company clearly to the next level. Another success that we released in a press release, this one was on October 10th, was that there were multiple papers that had been presented in countries throughout Europe, specifically in Germany and Poland and Ireland, and these were from some key opinion leaders, and we felt strongly, particularly since one of the sets of papers that were presented was at a mass spectrometry meeting that was sponsored by SCIEX, our co-marketing partner, SCIEX. And they invited us, and Dr. Lazarev presented, but other people presented on our technology at this SCIEX users meeting. It was very humbling to hear other people, particularly key opinion leaders, talking about the advantages of using our system. So we felt strongly that the papers being published were going to help us move even faster in our expansion throughout Europe. We also, on October 18th, announced a strategic collaboration. This one is with a Massachusetts company, Phasix Corporation. Phasix is a company that has been in the area of what's called supercritical fluids or supercritical fluid extraction for a number of years. The gentleman who started it maybe 35 years ago, MIT grad, a PhD graduate, an expert in supercritical fluid extraction. We've known, Dr. Lazarus have known him for maybe 15 years, and Alex went to see him, brought me with him. They just moved to a new facility. They have tremendous capabilities. And what they basically do is they take plants and they use carbon dioxide and other gases to extract molecules from these plants. And this enables you to have the molecules freed up without having to add chemicals that could actually not be good for human use. So we told them what we had. They were very excited about what we had, and we formed a strategic collaboration. And now we are two legs of a multi-leg stool, the next leg, and we're continuing to talk, just beginning to talk, with a number of companies that have a need for extraction of material from plants. But what we're talking about here is not just the supercritical fluid extraction, but bringing on, following the extraction, ultra-shear technology so that the materials coming out of the plant can go through a second process, which will hopefully reduce them to the point where they can be better absorbed and become much more bioavailable, more stable, no use of chemicals, things like that. So this is something which not only are the patents we received and the patents we believe we'll receive important, but we're already starting to look at the possibility. This is not something that's 2 or 3 years out. This is something that may be 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 months out. So we're excited that we not only have the patents, but we have the collaboration with a fantastic group at Phasix Corporation, experts in supercritical fluid extraction, and we have already been talking to them about potentially bringing up companies that have needs that we think that can we can answer, and they can certainly answer the extraction part, and they're very interested in helping us develop the secondary part, the secondary processing part using ultra-shear technology. And finally, on November 1st, we put out a press release talking about a center of excellence that we set up in China. China is a wonderful opportunity for us. They are putting a lot of money into the life sciences. They're putting a lot of money into R&D and development in China. And it is a country that we have several staff members who are fluent in Chinese. We have Dr. Gao, who left after getting his getting done his work with Professor Rudy Ebersold, voted the number one protein chemist in the world 2 years ago. Dr. Gao worked with Professor Ebersold for 4 or 5 years. He left to go back to China after doing a postdoc. He's an MD and a PhD, Dr. Gao, and he's at the Westlake Institute for Advanced Study, a major research institute in China. And he has agreed to become a center of excellence, our first ever in Asia, where he will have customers or potential customers of ours come into his lab and see his and see our equipment, see how it works, and talk to Dr. Gao. And we believe that with his help, we now have a much better opportunity of growing our business in China. So we've had a number of successes in the third quarter. Certainly, having our consumables increase by 158%, having our revenue increase by 21%, breaking the $600,000 barrier, significantly breaking it at almost $650,000 for the first time. Remember, a year ago was the first time we'd only broken $500,000 once. This last quarter we broke $640,000, and we believe this is the start of an accelerating revenue from this company because of the new equipment that we have, the next generation equipment, the work with our key opinion leaders, and of course our 5 new salespeople headed up by Roxana McCloskey, who was our only salesperson for 10 years, and now she is our director of sales for North America, and I'm happy to say that the sales team is in. For the first time, they're in this week. They came in yesterday. I had an opportunity to spend an hour with them. We will all have time with them. They are a terrific group of skilled and experienced salespeople, and we let them know right off the bat that this company is depending on them to do what we've told our investors and other stakeholders they're going to do, which is go after the accounts and start to increase revenue at a much higher rate than we've been increasing it. As I've told a number of people, we have been very reactive in our sales. I'm not embarrassed to say that because with one salesperson, she's done a terrific job over the years. But the number of leads coming in from our key opinion leaders and papers and press releases, etc., were so much that she had to spend all of her time pretty much at home ushering these leads, walking these leads. Some may take 3 weeks, some may take 6 months, but ushering them to a close and a sale. And Roxanne has done that and done that terrifically. And because of that and the help from Dr. Lawrence and others, pretty much everybody in the company touches the product and touches the sale at some point. Because of that, our sales have consistently increased over the last 3 or 4 years. So we've gone from $300 to $400 to $500 now to $600,000 a quarter. That's all with one salesperson. We did have several orders that came in the third quarter that were helped by our new sales staff, and we're expecting that to be even greater in the fourth quarter and next year. So we also have new products coming out. We have 4 instruments that we have developed. We've spent, I would guess, $3 or $4 million developing these instruments, but we're really not selling them. We're not actively, aggressively selling them because, like the 2320, they need to be upgraded with software. They need to be upgraded with other bells and whistles. We're doing that now. And so I'm excited about next year because not only do we have a fantastic instrument that's selling to the point where, we might, you know, this has never happened before. We think when we build 25 instruments, it's going to last us a period of time. We've built 25 instruments twice, and we've sold out just about at the time when we started building the next one. So, and it's happening again. So the sales are increasing. The instrument is terrific. We have the sales team that's in now. We haven't even begun to push the fact that our software is GMP and GLP compliant. We really haven't had marketing push on that yet. That's going to happen coming up in the coming weeks. We need to let the world know that this software has now been upgraded multiple times to the point where they can depend on it with their work internally for quality control and other things in a large biopharma company or even a small biopharma company. But with all of these things going for us, we believe the fourth quarter, on a year-over-year basis, fourth quarter has always been, I believe, 3 or 4 years in a row, it's been our weakest quarter. We lose a week at Thanksgiving. We lose a couple weeks at Christmas. The fact that we have orders in or orders or indications of orders that we put into a column that is 90% or greater, and as I mentioned several months ago, rarely, they may fall off, but rarely do orders fall out when they're in the 90%. We have orders already through the first month and week that equal all of our orders for last year. This doesn't mean we're going to double the sales. I would not say we're going to double our sales, but we feel strong enough that we've given guidance that we believe our sales in products, in instruments, in total revenue will exceed last year's number in the fourth quarter of this year. How much, I can't tell you, but we feel confident that they will exceed. So a number of great things going on here. I have things I can't talk about. I can tell you that there are 3 or 4 projects right now that are underway that we're extremely excited about that we think we think will generate short-term return in revenue. Some of them are, one is more midterm and one is more long-term, but we are working on projects. Some of them are internal. Some of them are with collaborators external, but there's 4 major projects we're working on, and I'd say there's probably another 6 or 8 projects that aren't as big. So in addition to everything that's going on, there's probably about 12 projects right now that we have balls in the air that we're working on. But again, we're very, very interested in 4 of them. One relates to ultra shear technology, as you might have guessed. One relates to the existing equipment that we've built and spent many millions, 3 or 4 million building, and we haven't really pushed it out the door yet, but I'm very confident that over the time between the fourth quarter of this year that we're in and all of next year, these 4 pieces of equipment, each of them with really good potential, will be ready and will be commercialized, and they'll be added to the list of things that our new sales team is going to be able to sell. So with that, Roya, I'm going to stop and I'm going to take a breath and turn it over to everyone who took the time to join us today and take some questions.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. And thank you. Our first question comes from the line of Dan Wong, a private investor. Please proceed.
Hi, Rick. Congratulations on all the success so far. It seems like things are going just as long as you had described it and gave us an overview there. So congratulations on that.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
What I'm really interested, though, is this UltraShare technology. I live in the San Diego, California area, and CBDs is a hot topic, and not only, you know, public markets, but as far as the medical markets, I mean, a lot of people are talking about the way it's revolutionizing certain cures for all types of things, epilepsies and seizures, things of that nature. So with UltraShare, you applying that to the CBD space, I mean, obviously people are looking for more bioavailability and effectiveness of that. I mean, how does UltraShare play into that technology specifically?
Well, you know, CBD, cannabidiol, is a molecule that is in the hemp plant. It's in the cannabis plant. Has nothing to do with the active compound, the psychoactive compound THC. In fact, I believe there's a regulation out there that CBD has to be less than 0.3% THC in it. Our friends, our colleagues at Phasics are, as far as I know, I believe they are extracting CBD from hemp for at least one or two different companies in the U.S., and they have it down pat. They know what they're doing, and just has nothing, again, there has nothing to do with the psychoactive compound. CBD is something which some people think it's just blown out of proportion, and some people think it is a miracle compound. The important thing is that it comes out of the plant, it comes out in an oil, and that as far as I know, and you may be know much more than me about this, but as far as I know, Dan, everyone, and I've read, I know dozens of companies I look at occasionally that are publicly traded. Most of them are on the over-the-counter, but they're publicly traded. I know some that are privately traded, and they all seem to have one issue, and that issue is bioavailability. When CBD is purified and it's in plant oil, it is tough to become, when you ingest it, for it to become bioavailable to your system because it's in oil, and oil doesn't get absorbed by our system. And therefore, you're hitting the nail on the head. As soon as we put the press release out on the fact that we had UST patented and then followed it a month later with a press release saying that we've done a collaboration with Phasics, we had calls from plant companies that were interested in learning more because they wanted to know if this was a way that perhaps the molecule they're interested in could be CBD, it could be another nutraceutical, whether or not that could be, ours could be a process to make their sample more bioavailable. And the answer is potentially, absolutely. That's the whole thing here. We believe we can break oil and oil droplets down to nano levels, and these nano levels will make the oil so small that the oil should be able to be absorbed by the gut, and therefore it should be able to absorb with whatever is inside of that oil droplet. We believe that we can make some things that are just impossibly water-soluble, make them so that they are water-soluble, or certainly go into solution enough that they can be absorbed. So the answer is, I would say of all the phone calls I've personally fielded on UltraShear technology, and it's been quite a few, I have to say that maybe 80% relate to CBD. It appears to be one of the hottest topics available now, and it seems to be something which the companies that are selling that product are extremely interested in making it more bioavailable.
And I also wanted to ask, though, about, obviously it's more effective and bioavailable, but as far as having them use less CBDs, because that could improve the bottom line for those companies. And I don't know about now, but before I've heard about the kind of the supply of CBDs not being as readily available. I mean, maybe it is more today, but, you know, what type of estimates would you have as far as that affecting their bottom line, as far as the amount of CBDs? Now they can use basically less CBDs than they normally have to get the same effect or better.
Don't know about the effect because, you know, a lot of this, they're lacking a lot of scientific data, which we would love to see. I've been online, I've read the stories, I've watched the videos. It's very interesting what this can do, but we don't have enough scientific data. There's a number of things in life that you don't have scientific data for, but it works, so you do it, whatever it is. So in that case, I think the way I'd answer that is I heard and I've read that less than 10% of CBD becomes bioavailable when it's in oil. And so that's not a very good response there, 10% or less bioavailable. So if we could use our process to break the oil down to make it more absorbed by the body, and that means should mean that the whatever is inside that oil, whether it be any type of nutrient, it should become more bioavailable. So the answer is I would expect that, yes, our process has the potential to make these products much more bioavailable, which would mean that either you can get more or perhaps you can use less and get the same effect. That all has to be determined by the companies that are making it, but I believe that we have the process that has the potential to do that.
That makes sense. Now, besides the CBDs, you know, you mentioned paint and, you know, salad dressings, things like that. And I know it's kind of hard for, I think myself, to wrap my head around the size of the market and potential because you have so many different applications. But, you know, where do you see this heading next to where people kind of wrap their minds around the type of market share you can capture with this technology?
It's mind-boggling. The number of emulsions that are we run across every day, you know, milk is an emulsion, paint is an emulsion, inks are emulsions. There's just so many things, and the power of ultra shear technology is that we believe we can take emulsions down to the nano level. Now, we're not the only group. Trust me, there's plenty of people that are working with nano emulsions. The key here is we have a way of getting it there, and we believe that we have a way of very efficiently and inexpensively building up to where it can be at a manufacturing level. I think that's very important. There's a lot of we've talked to people. Dr. Ting, who's the co-inventor here, Dr. Ting is someone who has been working in these fields for 20 years, and he has worked with a number of people, you know, on the academic level primarily, that have developed ways of making nanoemulsions. But to scale that up to where you can, you know, run through hundreds or thousands of liters is something which most of these technologies just can't do. From everything I've read and heard, they just can't do. We believe that our technology can be scaled to a manufacturing level where if you had to do hundreds or thousands of liters or gallons, it could be done. And that is a key. How many things in life can you do on a tiny little scale, and when you try to build it up, it can't be done? We believe that the way that Dr. Ting and Dr. Lazarev put this together and the way the patent was filed is that it is not only capable of making nanoemulsions, but capable of being scaled up to a manufacturing level.
Well, thanks, Rick. I can't wait to see where that lands. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You'll press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. And thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jess Mosseri with Greystone Asset Management. Please proceed.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, how are you?
Congratulations. I think you've made stupendous progress.
Thank you.
That's very exciting. Now I'm going to get down and dirty. How many instruments do you think it'll take you to sell to get to break even?
I've given this number out, so I don't mind giving it out. I believe at 1,000, it could be less because the instruments are holding their gross margin and we're selling more directly than through distributors. So I feel pretty comfortable saying that if we had 1,000 instruments in the field, we have about 300 now. If we had 1,000 instruments in the field, we'd be at break even and profitable.
Okay. Now, how much cash do you have on the balance sheet right now?
I can't tell you what I have on the balance sheet right now. We did not have a lot of cash on the balance sheet. Yeah, but take a look at the receivables. The receivables were about twice. Joe, what's the number?
550,000.
Our receivables are normally around 200. We had a tremendous, not only did we have a tremendous third quarter, but essentially, a lot of that happened in the last few weeks of September. It's just the way it works. Summer is slow. You get back from Labor Day, people get going, and by the 10th of September, things start to happen. So we had a number of sales. So quite frankly, you know, we've been living on our receivables a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We've had very good receivables. So we could not window dress. We didn't want to window dress. It's all there in the AR. In terms
right.
of our cash flow.
Okay, thanks. And can you give me some idea of, with the new sales force, what will your cash burn be per quarter?
You know, it's a good question. Our operating loss for, as Joe mentioned, you know, it's tough to look at it because, especially to compare it to the third quarter last year because that 400,000 plus
right. exactly. Yes.
credit we had. But, it, you know, it's our operating loss for the last year on a normal quarter has been around 950 to 1.1 million where it was here. I think our operating loss would have been down a little bit had we not had these extraordinary circumstances that affected it. I think our operating loss is at its high right now. So if you take a look at a 1.1 million operating loss as a high, so we're looking at, you know, $350,000 a month or so, that is probably, I don't expect it to grow. In fact, I strongly expect it to be reduced. We did not have much of a positive impact from the sales team in the third quarter. I'm not going to say it was zero. They helped us with two sales, but, it wasn't much. And that was, you know, in our business, we normally say it probably takes 6 months for a salesperson to start generating sales. So we're expecting some good feedback and some good orders from our guys in the fourth quarter, which is what we told them yesterday. And we certainly expect that they're going to be up and running in the first quarter, knowledgeable of everything they have and knowing how to sell it. So to get to 1,000 instruments is a, you know, on the one side, it's a daunting task. If you say, my gosh, that company's been in business for years and they're only at 300. Well, we had an older machine that was run by a microprocessor that could only do one thing for the companies buying it. Now it can do multiple things in multiple areas of a company. We have four more instruments coming out, and we have a sales team. So to get to 1,000 instruments is something that is, I think, well within our reach. I have said publicly on numerous occasions that once we get everything together, we should be able to get to profitability within about 2 years. And so we're basically almost there, getting everything together. This is a dream we've worked on for some time now, to be in this position where we have a sales team, we have the key opinion leaders which are supporting us, we have the brand new instrument. You know, it's an exciting time for us.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Aaron Robb with Tangiers Capital. Please proceed.
Hi, Rick. I just wanted to ask real quick on the reason why the Gunner offering wasn't executed. And then secondly, I wanted to ask, what is the plan for the company's debt level going forward? I noticed that the interest expense is running about 2.5 times revenue currently.
So the Gunner, we pulled that. We withdrew that registration statement on August 14th. It was just not in the cards. Raising money in the summer is tough enough. raising money in August is the worst, perhaps other than maybe over the Christmas holidays. And the appetite for investors I found for doing and raising money for an uplist, which was very high a year ago and 2 years ago, was not nearly that high anymore. So we thought it was in the best interest of the company to pull that. It had not a reflection on Gunner, certainly not a reflection on the company. It just wasn't, sometimes it's not in the cards, it wasn't in the cards. So I can tell you, Aaron, that we are committed to getting this company up to a national exchange. We are committed to doing an uplist. I can't disclose how and when and where, but I can assure everybody that we know this company. We run it like it's a NASDAQ company. We understand that it being on the OTC limits the number of investors, especially, well, investors and institutions that will buy and invest in us. So it remains a major goal of ours, and we expect that we will achieve that goal. So the issue with debt, I won't go into any details, but all I can tell you is that when a company like us, particularly on the over-the-counter, needs funding, it's not often the best funding you can find. And in other words, sometimes the funding a company like us can find is expensive. And we have a choice. The choice is to not take the expensive money and grow at a snail's pace and not hire a sales team and not build a new instrument and not build additional instruments, or to take the expensive money and grow. And that's what we've done. There's no hiding the facts. The fact of the matter is we spend a lot of money in interest. I hate it. I hate debt. I hate interest. But the fact of the matter is I love growth. I love success. I love reaching goals. And we're doing that. And we're doing it at the cost of paying some pretty heavy penalties in interest. And our expectations is that we've reached the peak there, and that we are at a point now with the successes we've shown that we believe that we're more investable, and particularly if we move up to a national exchange. And I think that the cost of doing that business is going to go down. You bring up a very, very good point. I mean, the company has a history of operating losses and a history of losses per share. And there's a good chunk of that belongs to the fact that we pay some pretty heavy interest rates to borrow our money to grow the company. And it's a penalty we have to pay to be in a position that we have where we can show the growth, not just the financial revenue top-line growth, but the growth in operations that we've shown over the last year.
Okay, thank you for that. And then the current sales team that you just took on, are they trained in other verticals like the CBD, or will you have to take on additional numbers to expand out that way?
The answer is no, they're not trained in that, but no, we're not going to bring on additional people. We might have to bring on one more salesperson who will be a very strong technical person who will be the backup to them in all things PBI. We might have to do that. But we've hired five strong salespeople. They've all got years of experience in selling. They've all got years of experience in selling capital equipment. And training, it's a good question. They're in here now. They're going through. They've all been. We just hired the gentleman who's taken over California. He just started yesterday. But the rest of them have already been here at least once and gone through some training. And they're going through intensive training this week. They were out at an installation in Cambridge, Mass., I believe, or Watertown, Mass. today. They've got intensive training that they're going to be in. So we're all expecting that they'll be able to handle the main instrument, the 2320 Extreme, our award-winning instrument. They'll be able to handle the new instruments coming out. They'll be able to handle the applications. But when it gets into something like UST, that's a good question. Right now, I'm handling it with Dr. Lazarev and Dr. Ting and Dr. Lawrence. We're handling it at our level, and we'll make that decision, you know, as time comes. This is not something, UST is not something that is, it's not something you're going to look at us and say, hey, maybe 2 years from now they'll have something. We know what we have. We think we have the cat by the tail here. We think we really have something big. And we need our sales force to focus on what they're going to do best, which is, you know, we haven't visited customers in years, if ever. And I'm not ashamed to say that because we had one salesperson. They've been told every customer, every client that's ever bought anything from us in their territory, which is the U.S., broken into five pieces, they're going to visit by 12/31, and they're going to find out what they're doing, what research they're doing, are they using our instrument, can they use it, why aren't they using it, why aren't they using more consumables. They're going to dig. That's what they're going to do. I and the top-level team here are going to concentrate on UST. We're going to try to get some deals done in UST very quickly, and then at that point we'll figure out whether we need to hire somebody or whether we can actually bring our team in at that point and train them.
Okay. Thank you for all your answers. I appreciate that.
You bet.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jeffrey Scott with Scott Asset Management. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Rick.
Hey, Jeff.
A couple of questions. One, what are the manufacturing plans for the fourth quarter and for the first quarter of 2018?
We are building our, we've already talked to the manufacturer and we're already set up to build our next lot of 25 instruments. This will be our third lot of 25, and they will start, in January to build, which will make instruments available in February. So we'll have, we may run out of instruments for January. We may have to do something I don't think we've ever done before, which is tell customers you're going to have to wait 2 or 3 weeks, which is not a problem. We're not going to lose anybody. I've bought instruments where I've had to wait 3 months. We've always said it's a good problem to have when we can't sell from inventory and we have to say you got to wait for the next batch to come. And that may happen because our sales in the third and fourth quarter are going quite well. We can only build 25 at a time because it costs close to $400,000 of cash up front for us to buy all the parts. So we will be building our third lot of 25. And Jeff, after that, which I think will be around the time of our 10K call, and I know you'll be on, ask me the same question, and maybe the answer is we're going in to build a lot of 50 because that is going to be a great order to put in. It's a lot of money up front, but it'll be a great order to put in when we order parts for 50, not 25 instruments.
So it costs you $400,000 to build 25?
Correct.
$400,000 for the parts?
Correct.
Okay. Talk about the salespeople. It sounded, I'm trying to recall exactly what you said on the last call, but I gathered from that you would be spending more time on the big pharma companies and presumably with your five direct salespeople, and you would be leaving the mass spec business to your SciEx partner. Would that be a reasonable assumption?
Nope, not at all. Not at all. If that's what you interpreted, then I need to clear that up because that's certainly not what I think I said or what I intended to say. We're going after them. Our SciEx partnership is a co-marketing partnership, not co-selling, not distribution. They are bringing the word of PCT and how PCT and their method work together to make 1 + 1 = 5. That's what they're doing. They're doing it in a marketing sense. We're doing the selling. And the good news with that is that we don't share in the revenue. So we do have special programs for SciEx customers that come aboard, but this is not a distribution where we're losing 15%, 20%, or 30% off the top. So no, I didn't mean to say that. I don't think I said that. We're going after them. Now, you have to understand, Jeff, too, that many of the biopharma companies that we sell to have mass spec labs. And so when we say we're going after the mass spec labs, it's these are mass spec labs that are in biopharma companies. They're in other type of biotech companies. They're in hospitals. They're in research labs. So it doesn't matter. If they're using mass spec, we're going to find them, and we're going to bring them the information on how we believe we can make their life better and give them a better product to run to put into their mass spec. So we'll be selling it.
Okay, going back again 3 months, you talked about how the new machine has been upgraded in terms of the software, so it could be useful on a production platform as opposed to a onesie research platform.
Right.
And I guess that's where I was getting the idea that you would be spending more of your time talking to the large pharma companies about the production side as opposed to what you had historically done on the research side.
Nope. So we are going to focus on the biopharmas. You're right there. And the nice thing about biopharmas is that they don't usually buy one. They might buy three. They might buy 13. And we believe that we have customers that could buy 13 or more. We are training our guys this week. They're the latest revision of our software, I think for probably two meetings, maybe three of these calls, we've talked about the software. That software has gone through revisions every month or two since last year, since one of the biggest companies in the world said, if you can get a software that fits in with what we need, we can buy a lot of your instruments. And so they held our hand and walked us through at no cost to us and told us what a big company is looking for. And if they, one of the biggest in the world, are accepting it, and they are because five instruments have been sold to the U.S.-based, one of the U.S.-based companies that they own, then that same capability is there for another 100 biopharmas. But there's a limited number of biopharmas compared to academic and government and independent researchers out there. So our guys are going to call on all of them. If somebody has a mass spec, they're going to call on that lab. If it's a biopharma, then we have some additional bells and whistles that they're going to get. And the nice thing about that one visit could end up being a sale of 3 or 13, you know, instruments. If it's a academic lab, it's probably a single sale. If it's a government lab, it's probably a single sale. Or a biotech or pharma working in a different area, it's probably a single sale or a double sale. So, no, our guys are going after the low-hanging fruit of the mass specs not because our system doesn't work well in front of other instruments. It does. But it's that it started out with mass spec and it kind of grew in the mass spec world. And so if you look at 120 papers, 130 papers, publications, a lot of them are putting our instrument in front of a mass spec. So when you have those kind of data, that's where you want to go because we can bring out a dozen papers to show them how people are using it in front of a mass spec. We can't necessarily do that when they're using it in front of a DNA sequencer or in front of other instrumentation. But we'll get there.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. We have no further questions in queue at this time. I'd like to hand the floor back over to management for closing remarks.
Thanks. And thanks, everybody, for joining. Again, very excited about this past quarter. A lot of good things happened, both financial on the top line were terrific. Our goal is to continue to watch the bottom line and start to try to reduce that. And one way to reduce it is increase the top line. We need to sell more instruments. We know that. Our goal is to get to 1,000 instruments, and then we'll set another goal. Our first goal is to get to 1,000 instruments. We're at 300. We do not believe it's going to take us years to get to 1,000 instruments. We believe that with the sales team, with the new instrument that we have, with the key opinion leaders in the last couple of years that have come on, with the new software, that it's going to accelerate our sales, which is why we got our lawyers antsy and put the word accelerate sales and things like that in our press release. So We're very happy. We appreciate everyone's continued support. We think that this is the beginning of something that's really good for all stakeholders in the company, and look forward to talking to everybody when we release our fourth quarter and year results in March. Thank you.